We have with us live in the studio, Nick Madron, the co-producer of The Closing Show. Welcome.
Kia ora. Thank you for having us on board.
Yeah, no, stoked to have you here. Can you begin by telling us about your role in the inception of this group, Big Horns?
Yeah. It sort of goes back, I guess my career is part of the reason it's here in some ways. I've been an audio engineer for 30-something years touring, not fully touring the whole time, but had time in the UK, and I guess it's a little bit of a self-indulgent result of that, meaning that what could be the best combination of players, sounds, instruments, and the brief being all live, so no tracks on this, there's some samples, but nothing, sort of locking it in as a pre-recorded show. So it's really exposing us, but also putting us all the talent that we have in New Zealand, giving them a chance to really showcase themselves. So I guess it goes back. I had the privilege of one of the shows I worked on in the UK, which was actually a Robbie Williams show at the Royal Albert Hall called Swing When You Win. He performed there. And it was a brass big band event. It was all filmed and everything else, but we did the show in the venue. But the night before, we went up to Ronnie Scott's, which is a jazz club in London, and we took the 22-piece brass band only, and Rob, into that little club for about 150 people and ourselves, and we had no microphones, nothing at all. We just performed that show as a rehearsal kind of thing, but also as a performance. And it just hit me as I was standing at the back of the room, the power of what brass can do. It was so powerful. And Rob at times even sang without a mic and stuff like that. It was actually really, it was one of those moments you sort of pinch yourself, am I really here from New Zealand? And from there it kind of triggered a thought in my mind, I'd love to be able to produce something of that level with those sorts of instruments. I just sort of left it there for a while. And I guess as COVID came along, that opens up sort of many a creative mind of what should we do, how do we do this now that we've got no income coming in. So I've my dear friend Dixon Nacy, who's also an absolute legend himself as a musical producer, I hit him up, and we actually both work on Christmas in the Park. He's the musical director and I actually mix the sound out the front. So I hit him up and said, look, I've got this crazy idea, what do you think? And he kind of went, oh man, that just sounds fantastic. So we kind of noodled around with the idea of quite a while, and we thought, well, for me it was, if you bring all those brass together, and not just brass of say just trumpets and saxes and so on, but the whole spectrum of the sound, so tubas, sousaphones, bass saxes, tenors, altos, and how wide can we make that range sound and get them to play along with bass lines, with the melodies and everything else. So the brass isn't just doing the stabs and the bites, it's actually playing with the rhythm section of the band, which creates different sort of tones and sounds. So if the bass player is playing his line, you got the tuba going along with it, then that grittiness comes through. And so for me as a sound engineer, it's kind of like a really amazing producing space for me up front, mixing the show. So yeah, that's where that self-indulgent thing came about.
Gosh, I have so many questions. I actually don't even know where to start. I guess, first of all, that's kind of crazy that the inspiration came from a Robbie Williams.
Yeah, kind of. I guess it was the brass thing was from that, and it wasn't. Yeah, and my sister's also in the NZ, so I was a French horn player as well. There's been history of stuff around.
What was your history with getting into audio engineering?
Music. Like just a complete passion for music. Yeah. It was in a band.
Did you play an instrument growing up then?
Yeah, I wouldn't say great, but I did play drums.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, played the drums. But I guess...
not lovely for your neighbours.
No, because it was electric drums in those days were quite expensive, so I kept to the more acoustic and pots and pans. But no, I needed an income really, and so audio engineering came off the back of... probably thought being a musician wasn't really enough to pay the rent, so I started pushing boxes into venues in Wellington, actually, in the early days.
Yeah, and which venues?
oh god, what were they called? There was a club in Wellington called Stax Nightclub. There was Bats Theatre, and then there was the other venues, St James Theatres, and so on. And I ended up working for a sound company there, which I then later managed, and so on. And then moved my way through to Auckland, and then off to London.
Mm, cool. I would like to pick your brain a little bit on the audio engineering.
Oh yeah.
Side of things. How would you describe what you do to an outsider?
I guess we're recreating what's coming off the stage is our real job. As time goes on, if you're a touring engineer, you'll probably start to get into producing more, meaning that you are taking what they're doing and you're adding lots of flavor to it with effects, processing and everything else. And that happens because you've got 8 months with that particular artist, or you've spent time in the studio with them. So there's a lot of that can happen and does happen. Otherwise, also people who come along and do things sort of like you get called up and say, come and mix so-and-so at the festival. You'll just get there and you're really just picking up what they're doing, giving it the best version you can create in that time. So I guess our biggest thing really is to give it vibe, make it feel good for everyone.
Yeah.
It's kind of the philosophy I've always gone with. And if it's good for me, and I'm one of many people, if I think I'm feeling good, I feel like that most people around me are also enjoying it. And I do look around the room a lot when I'm mixing,
yeah,
just to see what people are doing.
So what exactly are you adjusting when you're looking around the room and maybe the vibe isn't so great? What's something that you would do to help that situation?
Yeah. I guess it's the song. I guess it's everything. It's what is that? What's that moment representing? Is it a ballad? Is it something that's poetic? Is it something that's meant to be emotional? And you're going to blow into it lovely reverbs and delays, and you're going to make that low end feel warm and cozy, or is it hardcore metal? And you want that wall of sound, and you want that clicking kick drum, and you want that something to feel you're driving the audience into excitement. Or is it a dance party? Do you want that that thick low end that gets people pulsing away, that they want to keep going along?
The vibration in your heart.
Yeah. So all of that, every genre, every style has a completely different outlook, even theatre shows, which I've done a lot of as well.
What do you find sets apart setting up the brass performance, such as the one with big horns, compared to other kinds of shows?
Yeah, this one's... Well, we've surrounded ourselves with amazing people. Everyone in the group is top tier players, performers, and we consider ourselves lucky enough to be in amongst these people, and we're able to bring them on board onto an idea. Also, I suppose to help paint the picture, this show is built by musicians for musicians. It's not just a sort of here's a bunch of songs and we're just going to play it like this and it's going to make lots of money. We're sort of not really making any money at the moment on this project because we're passionate about it and we want to see what really works and cooks. So how we build this one up is Dixon's incredible in his arrangement. So we've really gone and reimagined these songs. We're not just playing the songs and the covers as they are. He's created with Mike Booth, who's trumpet, who also helps co-arrange the brass side of things. They've looked at brass parts and added more in and done lots of flavour changing. And we've cut the song. The show's actually like an end-to-end musical piece. So we're going from song, segue a song into another song and then into another song. So it's just back to back and how it all flows. We're kind of tapping into sort of genres and eras a little bit as well, starting with sort of 70s to 80s to 90s, and then we sort of go to the party finish at the end.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with co-producer of the Auckland Arts Festival closing show, Big Horns, with Troy Kingi and Deva Mahal. And I've just forgotten my question.
There's a lot going on.
Speaking on the show about how you said you have it flowing from one song to the next. So
yes.
There's not really space in between the songs. You've considered how the relationship...
Yes.
To each other.
Yeah, we have, and some of those segues are sort of kind of there's a storyline there, but not a spoken one or an obvious one. But with those segues, it's just sort of to allude to the next section of what we're going into. So it might be the 90s sort of hip-hop section, or it might be the 70s funk or 80s sort of grooves and stuff like that.
What was the thinking behind the ordering of the songs?
That was so hard. I drive to work and or do an hour in the car each day, and I ended up creating a list. I think we got to nearly 350 tracks for me.
Wow.
Dixon told me off because he had to unpick it all.
Yeah.
So there's so many options out there. I guess the big drive was that this is a finale. This is the Arts Festival's closing finale. So we really had to focus hard on it's a party and we want it to be a party for the audience, and that's basically the brief. Let's get that house to cook. So, but we also don't want to be straight down the middle, completely obvious on the tunes. We've gone a little bit left of center at times. There'll be a lot of interesting moments of where's that come from. There's mix-ups, there's mash-ups, there's blends. We're going out of one song into another and back into it again. So it was kind of that's how we sort of built the show, was to and the segues was to sort of think about how can it just keep flowing, make it interesting, and showcase the players most of all, because if they're having an amazing time, that only transcends into the audience itself, and then we all have a good time. That's kind of.
How did Big Horns come about in terms of reaching out to the players? What was the process behind that?
Well, first of all, in talking to the concept to Dixon, his eyes lit up, and I was so honoured to have that reaction. And then with him, he's heavily connected, and with all he's a respected musician, and with his Christmas in the Park producing stuff, he's got the connections for all that world, and so he just explained what the show was, and very quickly everyone was yep as much as and depending on people's schedules, of course, but it was a very easy sell to what we're trying to achieve. But the other part to it, I suppose, is it's, as I say, it's not going to a little nightclub and seeing a really good band, which there's some amazing ones around, but we decided this is something that needs to be put on a bigger stage, and we wrap a proper concert around it and present it in a large scale format all the way around. So there's lots of high production with the high level of band as well.
Can you go into more detail about what the high production is?
Yeah, absolutely. We've not gone with big screens and LED and flames and CO2 and all that stuff.
Damn.
We've done it. So the song and the performance has to be the centerpiece. So you're not going to see a sort of a darkened band and big screens. You're seeing the artist, but lots of lighting. Mm-hmm. Possibly a disco ball and a few other things as well. So lots of lighting. Audio, obviously that's my passion. So there's a big emphasis around the sound. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I guess people may or may not recognise it, but there's a huge amount of effort around how the production has been built with getting to the end result. So it's not just a band's turned up and we're just going to mix it. We've taken the creation has come from a sound point of view. Obviously it was me involved and stuff like that, and how everything comes across. So sound's a big one.
When you say sound point of view, can you describe that a bit more?
Yeah. Probably a little bit as the brass plays, so you've got the zuzas and tubas, which is the low end sort of brass. So.
What is a zuza? Sorry to interrupt.
It's okay. No problem. So you know, in America you have those big marching bands, and you have the guy who's got the brass instrument wrapped around his body in a circle with the big bell above his head.
Yes.
That's the zuza.
Very cool. I like that description. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a massive instrument, goes so low and gets uber gritty when he gets down there on those low notes.
Okay, please continue.
Yeah, no. And a tuba is of similar tone, and put them together, you've now got something even fatter. Then you put together bass sax. So you've got a tenor sax, which is a smaller one, alto, tenor, and then bass, and they range in size, and you add more bass to that as well, and then you've got the tenors and the altos to help complement the range. So I guess that's, when I say sound, that's a lot of it. But we talk a lot about the brass, but the rhythm section is absolutely killer. The players in there are just solid. We've got an amazing drummer and bass player who are tight as, which you need for this style of music. You need that absolute bed that everything sits on, of groove. And then we've got a fantastic keyboard player who's and with Dixon, who's on guitar, by the way. So he's not just MD, he's guitaring. And he's an amazing guitarist. He's got a huge history of what he's achieved in his career, and he's incredible. So between the two of them, they create wonderful, huge melody sounds. He's actually been working heavily on, just a little insight here, he's working on a stereo guitar setup, low sort of sound on one amp, higher on another. He's been working hard on the samples and sounds, so his guitar as well is going to be a huge part of how the room sounds. Our keyboard with all the patches and stuff. We've also got a percussionist on this one, so that's fantastic as well. He's amazing. He's a Brazilian guy. He's full of flavor. And then on top of that, again, we've got a DJ. And he's scratching and dropping in samples and stuff, and he's an incredible scratcher as well.
Would you put that into the category of percussion, or is it in its own?
Yeah, it's a mix of percussion, and it's a mix around sort of, I guess, the dropping of the samples and stuff like that, especially more on the hip-hop tracks. He'll throw some samples in there, and then he'll be some scratching as well.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a mix, but definitely in the percussive area. But it's a subtlety as well at times. He's not on everything, so it's not a continuous, every song has to scratch. He's flavoring as we go along. And also he's going to DJ before the show.
Oh, yep.
And after the show for a little bit. Cool. So we get to have, it will be from Doors till no more Doors music.
That's a nice thought to have in terms of the entire experience, including waiting for the band to come on.
Yeah.
How long did it take to get this project to life?
Well, we've done it on a sort of a shoestring budget approach, because these things can blow out very quickly. And we wanted to, I guess, take the more organic approach of letting it grow without, I mean, sometimes you throw money at things, it can not quite have the same result as if you sort of take your time and you have to work hard for that result. So it has taken us a little while. We did a show, a big fan. It's actually a showcase we did for a few people, just doing a performance there. And that was really cool, really cool. Nice little tight vibe.
That was last year?
No, that's actually 20, going back probably three, four years ago now.
Okay, was that the first show?
That was our first. Okay. Yeah, we did it. It was only a short show, but it was a little, that was our tester. And that was amazing. That was really cool. And then we held off for a bit, and we, about a year later, we organised with the Power Station, who have fantastically generous and helped us, supported us, believed in the idea. And we, on that time, we were sort of doing a hip-hop show, which was, that music is amazing as well, and a lot of those songs are sampled from the 70s and everything else. And then so we had a really amazing time at the Power Station. We were very grateful for that experience and stuff, so we thought, well, what can we do next? And so we approached the Arts Festival and said, look, we've got this project, who Dixon's worked with the Arts Festival for. And so we approached him and said, we've got this project, and what do you think? And once again, it was, there was a nice little moment for them, and they thought, this makes sense. It'll fit within this year's agenda. I thought, amazing. It was actually very last minute. We approached them and to them confirming their show as well. So they went away and had a think, and we came up with a sort of, it's been a little bit of a collaboration with them too in some ways as well. So we moved away from hip-hop completely. We've definitely got a lot of some great tunes in there that are from our previous show, but there's a hell of a lot of new ones in there as well. So that's where that soul, funk and groove comes in, so Earth, Wind and Fire to Stevie Wonder and so on, but we've twisted them all up a bit.
Oh, sounds really exciting. How have you seen the synergy between the two singers, Troy Kingi and Devon Mahal? Like, what's the synergy between them?
Great. Well, we're actually into our first rehearsal with them tonight. So we're actually, because it's so large, to get everyone in one room from day one isn't necessarily the right approach either, but also it's just too much because Diva's in Wellington and Troy's up north. So we've rehearsed in sectionals. So we've done our brass section, we've done our rhythm section, our other singers. We've got three other singers as well, Lady Lyric. We've got Sai Falau and Eddie, which are all fantastic singers as well. So they come out and do solos. But it was Troy and Diva that we've been working with them online with tracks, and we've given them all what we're doing. And I've actually just picked her up from the airport and dropped her at the hotel. And we've been having a long, amazing chat all the way through from that pickup. So we're in tonight. We've got a full band production rehearsal tonight.
Mm.
And tomorrow night, and then we do another one on the day of the show, and then the show itself. So yeah, we've got ourselves. So all the parts, it's like baking and cooking. You have you cut your things, and for now it all comes into the big pot tonight.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Nick Madron, who is co-produced the final show for the Auckland Arts Festival with Big Horns, called Big Horns is the group. And you've been an audio engineer for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
How has your career changed throughout that, or sort of what's your take on the current music scene, especially locally?
Yeah, so my career has been incredibly varied from, it could be a rock and roll thing, a heavy metal thing, through to a reggae, through to a theatre show, through to a corporate, through to a special event. And some of them have been incredibly challenging but rewarding at the same time. But I think the industry I started in the 90s and it wasn't as buoyant as it is now. It's huge now, which I'm so pleased to see. And I went to London in 99, I think it was, when it was, and there was some amazing bands back then, but it hadn't really kicked in. Freddie's was just sort of coming into the scene a bit more. And I sort of knew those guys earlier in my career when I was in Wellington. And I was so proud to see them being able to come through. And I was even more proud when I was in London and I could see them turning up and go and say hello and stuff. So that was wonderful to have those moments. And I think they've kind of really helped trailblaze the confidence into our industry that you can be bigger than your backyard. Obviously, there's lots of other success stories outside of them as well, with Lord and LAB and 660 and so on. So it's lovely to see that now that's opened the door to say you can do anything in this world, especially now with internet. That's really been the changer, because in my time there was no internet.
Mm.
It was still CDs.
So your position is one of optimism then?
Going forward? Yeah, I do. I think it's gonna get wider, in my opinion. I think there's a lot of, especially with home studios, and people can produce on their own. They can release on their own. You can do everything yourself now, and that creates a whole different world. And I used to go to the record store in Wellington, and Moo, who bless him, he's no longer with us, but he used to sell the records as a day job, and I used to sit there and chat with him, and I'd say, just give me anything, and go and find me two or three CDs or four, and I'd sit there in the corner and listen to what he'd given to me, and that was that was my way of now doing a Spotify playlist and say make a radio station, and it finds a whole lot of random stuff you've never heard before. So I used to always go onto this record store to do exactly that. So now that you have at your fingertips that ability, and it's so you can quickly throw things away a lot. And I guess there's a little bit of hope in there as well, that I hope people can kind of it's not just going from song to song, but they can listen to an artist's sort of story a bit as well. So like listen to an album, not just a single, because a lot of people, like that's sitting when they're with Moo, he'd give me an album. So for an example, he gave me Maloko, was an artist I never heard of at the time, and I put one of their albums on. I thought, my God, this is just incredible. But it was the album that was incredible. It wasn't just the single or the song. It was going from that one track to the next. And I hope that that's kind of what people can do in their bedrooms. They make albums and people get to appreciate their full art.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What would you recommend as a starting point for people wanting to get into audio engineering or sort of fine-tune their ear?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, there's two parts to that. Getting into the industry, there's a lot more opportunity out there these days than the earlier days. There's a lot more venues that have come online, especially with the NZICC, I suppose, is an example. But there's other ones, music venues and stuff, that are popping up around the country. It's good to see also, you know, there's ones in Hamilton and Tauranga are coming onto the frame with Live Nation, who are booking shows into those areas, which is great to see. But how to get in, I would say it's got to come... It's not an easy game in live sound. It's a very physical one, as much as anything. You do have to push speakers and boxes and load trucks and get into the grit a bit. And so if you're prepared to do some of that, start there. Find where you can be a crew person, be it at a venue, be it at a production company of some sort. I worked for free initially just to be present. And then if you enjoy that, then believe in yourself and obviously... Put yourself in there, and also learn. You'd have to go away and learn a lot. You have to really, you know, there's heaps of stuff with most now ChatGPT, but YouTube. There's a lot of examples of how to work something, a piece of equipment. These days, it's actually getting beyond me in many ways. It's very tech driven.
Yeah.
Now everything in the earlier days it was analog, so it was just a mic, a cable, and a speaker sort of thing. Now it's very much networking. And the processes behind that, and so so I think there's find it in your heart first. That's what you want to do, and then start figuring it out from there.
Oh, that's great advice, and thank you for sharing the story about the record store and Mu.
Oh,
what was the name of the artist? Moloko.
Moloko, yeah.
How do I spell that?
Moloko, I think it is. Moloko. She did the single, the most well-known single is Sing It Back, but the albums she's done, just a fantastic. Roisin Murphy was the singer.
Does Pure Pleasure Seeker ring any bells for you?
Okay. It does.
Maybe we'll play one of those tracks next.
Yeah.
Here we go. What are you most looking forward to this Saturday?
The audience.
Yeah, the dance party.
Seeing them enjoy themselves. Looks like we've sold really well. So I'm super, super grateful and pleased. Thanks to Arts Festival and making it happen. But just seeing them just enjoying themselves. I think for me, I'm so looking forward to the mix, getting behind the desk in that moment. Just seeing the pleasure of the audience walking in, what we do, and how they react.
Thank you so much. There are still some tickets left, so head to the Auckland Arts Festival website or just search up Big Horns, and I'm sure you'll find your way there, performing one show this Saturday at the Auckland Town Hall. We were speaking with Nick Madgen. Thank you so much for coming in.
Pleasure. Thank you for having us.
A very interesting conversation. We're going to play a Moloko track, an artist recommended to Nick, back in Wellington by Mu.
This is easy.